The Basin loves sports.
Hello.
Designed run for Janney. Right side. Janney going for the end zone, and he's got it. Touchdown, Henley.
That one's hit deep to left. No one's going to take that away. It is gone. A solo home run for Pua Cam Milbourne ties this one up at one.
Join us as we break down the biggest games and meet the biggest stars. From the 960 Sports Studios in downtown Klamath Falls, presented by Gino's Cafe, it's Ballin' in the Basin with Josh Eldridge and Matt Boley.
Not quite downtown for tonight's program. We are live from Gino's Cafe on East Main Street in Klamath Falls. So glad that you can join us on the air, or if you're here in person and can hear us, thank you so much for being with us at Gino's Cafe for Ballin' in the Basin. Same two guys with you, though, as always. My name is Josh Eldridge. Matt Bowling with me here. Matt, how are you?
Doing great.
Enjoying the vibe here at Gino's tonight?
Yeah, absolutely. We got the bar right over there, pool table over there. It's nice.
Starting to see some people file in as well. It is Wing Wednesday, I believe, here at Gino's. So if you're cruising around, you want to stop on by, grab yourself a drink, grab yourself some wings. I know we're going to help ourselves to some of that in just a little while. Gino's Cafe down here on East Main Street. Have you ever been a fan of Italian food?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I have... Man, I've been here, and they've got these the pasta Alfredo sauce that's always great. You know what's really good here that you'd be surprised by, though, is the breakfast burritos. You wouldn't suspect it from a place like this. I'm a breakfast burrito kind of guy. If you want one, this is the place to come here down on Gino's and enjoy us here at Ballin' in the Basin. Let's jump into some sports talk, though, because we've got quite a lot to cover tonight. Some high school football coming down the pipeline a little bit later on. We're going to start off, though, by talking some Oregon Tech. And it's going to take up about the first half of our show tonight, because our first guest this evening coming on a little bit later on is Kiana Jacobson with the Oregon Tech women's soccer team. She'll be joining us a little bit later on. But before we get there, let's start with some Oregon Tech golf, because the women's golf team just wrapped up a pretty long and successful invite down in Florida.
Yeah, they were at the invite at Innisbrook yesterday, wrapped up yesterday, finished 12th out of 19 teams. Quincy Bayrudy, who we had on the show last week, had another great outing, shot a 71, 76, and 74 to finish 10th out of 99 players. Lady Owls are going to be back in Klamath Falls on Monday and Tuesday, hosting the run-in at the ranch at the Running Y. Men's golf played last weekend at the Rumble at the Rock in Indiana. They finished third out of 11 teams. They were led by a freshman, Silas Guzlas. He shot a 76 and 72 to finish second in his first college event. That earned him Cascade Conference Golfer of the Week honors. Hustle and Owls are also going to be hosting the run-in at the ranch next Monday and Tuesday.
I was glad to see Quincy Bayrudy continuing her kind of dominance over the rest of the field. 10th out of 99 players. There were, what, 9 top 20 teams at that event in Innisbrook, and a YT player doing well, also a guest of this show. I think the good luck continues after you take a seat in the downtown studios.
No doubt. Cross country, both the men and the women competed at the Jim Hunt Humboldt Invitational in California on Saturday. They both placed third out of 3 teams. Individually, though, Bryce Worrell finished 8th, and Kai Miles, a freshman, finished 9th in his first college race. For the women, Charis Childers finished 10th, and Jane Kubrick finished 11th. Both teams are going to be at the Charles Bowles Invitational hosted by Willamette University on October 5th.
Nice to see Bryce. He's a Mazama alum, I believe.
He is,
yeah. So that's nice to see a local kid continue to do well up at the next level. I like to see that.
Volleyball, Lady Owls snapped a 6-match losing streak with a 3-0 win at Walla Walla on Saturday. They're now 8-7 overall, 1-6 in the Cascade Conference. They host Evergreen State on Friday and Northwest on Saturday. Both of those teams are below 500, so maybe a chance to get some momentum going again. And that's kind of been the story of the season so far for Oregon Tech. Before that losing streak, they had won 5 matches in a row.
Yeah, it's been kind of interesting for the past couple of seasons for that squad, because the season has been kind of emblematic of the way the program has been the last couple of seasons. You go up, you go down, you make the playoffs, you miss by a significant margin. You hope that by the end of the season, when that rolls around, that they end on that uptick, and hopefully it can start this weekend.
Standout player I want to highlight, Lucy Boyd, true freshman. She was the sole setter for the Lady Owls in their last 2 matches. They moved to a 1-setter offense from a 2-setter offense. She put up career highs with 44 assists and 15 digs at Lewis Clark State, then had 27 assists, 5 digs, and 4 kills the next night at Walla Walla.
That's a fantastic performance. You know, this season I've spent a lot of time trying to kind of understand volleyball, get into the stats a little bit more than I have in the past, because it's such a fun game to watch. But, I mean, learning more into it, some of these standout players are truly, truly impressive. And Selfless, 44 assists. You said that's a career high.
Yep.
That is truly impressive.
Moving over to soccer, Hustlin Owls snapped a three-game losing streak with a 2-1 win over Multnomah on Saturday. They were down 1-0 at halftime, but got second-half goals from Merrick Tambio, first of his college career, and Andrew Passang, who converted a penalty kick. Tech had to play the final 10 minutes down a man thanks to a red card, but held on. They head to Corbin on Friday and Bushnell on Saturday. As for the Lady Owls, we're actually going to be discussing their season so far with their leading scorer, Kiana Jacobson, coming up here in a little bit. They are 6-1-1 after a 3-0 win over Multnomah on Saturday, only one win away from matching last season's total.
It's where you like to be early in the season, already trying to make improvements over last year. Kiana has stepped into our booth here at Gino's Cafe, so we're going to step aside. And when we come back, we'll talk to Kiana Jacobson here at Gino's Sports Bar Cafe. Be sure you stop on by because it's going to be a lot of fun tonight. Already some people filing in. If you're listening, cruising around, join us here for Ballin' in the Basin, 104.3 and 960 Sports. Josh Eldridge and Matt Bowling with you, broadcasting live from Gino's Cafe on East Main Street in Klamath Falls. So glad to be with you tonight. Stop on by and enjoy the show in person. We appreciate you all the same if you stick with us over the air tonight on 104.3 and 960 Sports. And we've got our first guest here in the booth at Gino's.
She is a senior midfielder for the Oregon Tech women's soccer team. She currently leads the Lady Owls and is third in the Cascade Conference with 6 goals on the season. She has also scored in 5 straight games, tying the program record. She is Kiana Jacobson, our Gino's Sports Cafe and Market Athlete of the Week. Kiana, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
This has been a great season for you guys so far. As we mentioned, 6-1-1, already one win away from matching last year's total. The team has also surpassed last season's goal total. You've got 21 so far, had 17 all of last season. What is so different about this year's group?
I think we're able to build a more collective, like, team unity in there. The program's been through a lot, but with Tom, this being his second season in there, his first, like, full recruiting class and that, the girls, we all know each other much better. It's just, it's a whole different environment. Everyone's really competitive, and the culture is just different than it ever has been.
You individually have already surpassed your scoring total from last season, which was 5 goals. What's changed for you this season that's allowed you to make such a big leap?
I mean, first and foremost, absolutely the team. Like, we have great players all around, like, really deep talent, and I absolutely wouldn't be able to get the chances that I would have without them in there. I mean, like everyone else too, I've also done training on my own as well to get more calm in front of the goal and be able to finish those chances in there.
Your 5-game scoring streak coincides with a 5-game winning streak that started with a 3-2 win on the road at then number 11 Hope International. In that game, you scored the winner in the 81st minute. What did that do both for your confidence individually and for the team as a whole?
It was honestly amazing. We had a fun little team thing going on that really motivated us to win that game. But pulling out that final result, absolutely, I think it just confirmed what we knew we could do, and then being able to have that and see other people see that we can pull a result like that put some more respect out there for our name, which was really awesome to see.
This weekend, you're back on the road. You play at Corbin Friday at noon and at Bushnell Saturday at noon. These are a couple interesting matchups because Oregon Tech hasn't beaten Corbin since 2021. And last season, Bushnell came to Klamath Falls and beat you guys for the first time since 2014. What's the mindset for you and the team heading into those matchups?
We got to come out with just the same energy that we have been. And if as long as we play our game, I believe we can come away with 6 points on that weekend. We just got to come out with the game that we can play, intensity that we have, and yeah, I think we can come away with the results that we want coming up.
We're here with Oregon Tech soccer player Kiana Jacobson. Now, Kiana, I want to talk about your background because you've got a pretty unique backstory for a college athlete. We'll explore that in just a moment. But first, starting from the very beginning, what got you into soccer as a kid?
I played when I was really little, just like everyone did, but I took a little time away, did some Taekwondo, and then I came back and tried out for my first like competitive soccer team. And I love the team environment, and I'm also just a very competitive person in general, so I stuck with it, and I just kept going with it since then.
How did midfield become your position?
I grew up in a small town, so I just played for small town clubs, and I just got put in the center a lot, and so I kept getting used to it, and then I realized I kind of liked being around everything all at once, everywhere, so then I just kept staying in the middle, and that's kind of where I've just trained and grown my love for that position.
Were there any players growing up, or even still today, that you try to model your game after?
I feel like growing up, every little kid's got to look up at the goats out there like Messi and Ronaldo. But truly, I do love the way Rose Lavelle plays. I'm from Washington, so she played at OL Reign, and then when it went to just Reign, absolutely loved watching her play and how she played too. So I would say her.
So you've been Oregon Tech's penalty taker for both years you've been in the program. You're a perfect 3-for-3 so far. What goes into your PK technique, and how have you refined it over the years?
you got to take a lot of them. You got to build a routine. I mean, similar to like basketball and taking free throws, it's just a routine you got to build up, practice thousands and thousands of times. So even if you are nervous, even if something is off that day, you've just muscle memory done it so many times that even if you don't hit it where you're going to hit it, the miss is going to be small because you've just done it so much.
So now to the backstory. You did not originally go to college for soccer. You were in the marching band at Central Washington playing the flute.
Yeah.
What led you to initially pursue music at the college level, and how did you find your way back to soccer?
Truth be told, there's not a whole lot of education out there on how playing in college sports works. So I didn't know how that really worked because, like I said, I played in a lot of small clubs. And I knew that Central Washington had a soccer team, but I didn't know how to, like, get myself there or I even, like, think that I was, like, good enough at the time or anything. It was honestly just the classic, like, oh, you're going straight out of high school, go to college for something, even if you don't know what it is, just go. And I absolutely love band and all that, so I don't regret my time there at all. It helped me realize that I loved working with kids and that teaching was really fun, but I didn't see myself continuing in that career field. And I had always had this dream of trying to play at the highest level I absolutely ever could, but I feel like it's not common for teachers or people to just say, like, oh, that's kind of unrealistic. So it was always just on the back burner. And so switching it up, once I got more in the know of the soccer scene and, like, met more people around it and then got more educated around it, I was like, oh, wait, this actually could be something that I could do and pursue. So, yeah.
So is the music band, that sort of thing, is that still part of your life in any capacity?
I mean, it'll always be a part of my life, always. That's the great thing about it, is that once you learn the instrument, it's always going to be there. It's just not as prevalent for sure, but I still have my instruments, and I mean, if I ever get bored, I still like go and play or whatnot, but yeah, it'll always be a part of my life. It's just not the focus right now, so.
In early 2022, you started playing for Snohomish County FC, the little semi-pro club. You played for both their indoor and outdoor teams. What was the biggest adjustment for you going, you know, from indoor, outdoor, and back?
You guys dug deep for these. I played with Snohomish You said the biggest difference, like going from there.
Indoor,
to
outdoor, kind of. What do you have to adjust there?
Just tactics, honestly. I actually love indoor a lot because you still get to use the same techniques that you've built up with soccer, in terms of like passing or footwork or whatnot. But absolutely, playing at like a higher competitive like indoor level, tactics are so different. It's, and the rules are similar to hockey too, which was so fun to learn. And then it was mentally just hit the mic in my face there, but mentally challenging, and it was really fun that way. So yeah.
So later that year, you started in JUCO with Highline College, but you only got to play 4 games before an injury knocked you out for the year.
Yeah.
How tough was it for you after, you know, working your way back into the sport, working your way toward college ball, to now have to deal with that?
It was honestly, it was really devastating, 'cause I was getting really into it. I was getting a lot of film, a lot of training. And I mean, to go at the next level, you need film and training like absolutely 1,000 times over and over. And I honestly, like, it was a struggle because I didn't have like established myself in like that team. So yeah, it was tough going through that. And I honestly didn't know if I was going to continue on after that into the college scene, but I'm glad I did.
Yeah, you did. Summer 2023, you played with Tormenta FC in the USLW League, which is kind of like a college summer league like they have in baseball. Mm. Now, Tormenta FC is based in Statesboro, Georgia. So
yep.
I just want to know, after being in the Pacific Northwest your whole life, how hard did that southeastern climate hit you?
Honestly, it was just getting used to the humidity, which wasn't that bad. It was more so just being like telling yourself it's okay to be so sticky right now, because like as soon as you walk into a place with AC, it like all went away, and I was like, this is interesting. I've never had this happen before. But it, other than that, it was getting used to all the bugs around there. There's a lot of bugs. So yeah.
I ask because I'm from the Southeast, and yeah, you got it. Humidity, bugs, glad to be away from those.
How do the bugs compare to what we have here with the midges?
They're big.
Yeah, they're just big.
They're just big, yeah. And nasty.
Yeah.
All right.
So your coach at Highline, Tom Moore, you mentioned, he was named the head coach at OIT heading into the 2023 season. You, of course, joined him. How did that reunion come about? What was the process like?
I feel like, like I said, I didn't know if I was going to come back. So, and I was really trying to do all that I could to get like my name overseas and see if I could get a contract anywhere. Tormenta was helping me with that too. And I was going back and forth between, 2 options, and obviously one of them was OIT. And I was just talking to Tom about it, and we both, and some other people too back in Washington, and they're all saying it would be good to come back, finish a degree, but then also just get the college experience. Because like I mentioned earlier, teaching is one thing that I also really like, and I found that coaching is really fun. And I think that if I can get as much experience as I can in the entire realm of soccer and every aspect, then I think that'll just make me a better coach, because I'll have more information and experience that I can give to those that I'm coaching. And since I hadn't done college soccer, I was like, okay, I think this is a good avenue for me to go to. Yeah.
So after everything it took to get to that point, how did it feel to officially join a 4-year college program?
Honestly, really nerve-wracking, because I've been on my own for a while, with support from people here and there, but the move and like figuring out that was tough, and then coming down and not really like knowing anyone. Like I have a teammate, Kayla, that came with me from Highline, but like you mentioned, I broke my collarbone so early that I didn't really like get to know anyone super closely, so I didn't really know anyone. And then moving, it was tough not having anyone down here, but yeah.
We got Oregon Tech soccer player Kiana Jacobson. Now, Kiana, you're listed as a senior on the roster. Is this your final year of eligibility?
Yes, eligibility is fun and complicated sometimes, but this is my final quarter that I have of eligibility.
So what do you hope to accomplish in the time that you have left playing at Oregon Tech?
One of my goals I set out was to score more goals than last season, and so I've done that, so now I gotta make a new goal. But I don't, I haven't made that new goal yet, so TBD, I guess.
Now, you're a communication studies major. I know you said you wanted to get into coaching. What are you thinking you want to do with that degree career-wise?
Working with Snohomish County FC and getting to see the behind the scenes of a nonprofit organization and really just how like that organization runs on the back end and marketing, getting people involved. I really liked all that back end stuff. So honestly, something in public relations in the sports world would be awesome. I'd love to have my own like personal mission to educate people who are like me when I was younger and just didn't understand the college process or know much about it. If I can do that, coach on the side, build up the in-between soccer scene, because there's not too much in between the professional world and college, and if some people don't have access to college, then it'd be cool to build something up in between there.
Do you think you'll try to keep playing after college or just go straight into coaching?
If that opportunity arises, absolutely. I will totally go play. I'll play overseas. I'll play. If there's a contract, that'd be amazing. That'd be like the ultimate dream, right? But I'm not going to be upset if it doesn't happen because there's other avenues too.
So walk me through your game day routine, how you get yourself ready.
Oh, boy. I don't know if I have like a similar one every time, but I gotta eat breakfast. You have to eat breakfast. I know a lot of people don't, including myself sometimes on the school days, but breakfast is so important to fuel your body for the game. I always try to listen to songs that just put me in a good mood, you know, make me like laugh or happy. That's always good. I don't know. I try to make like the locker room jams a good vibe too, put people in a good mood. I don't have much else that I do though.
What are you listening to? Who's on the pregame playlist?
It's usually like 2010s like club music, I feel like. Pitbull gets on there sometimes. Sometimes there's some Spanish music on there too. Yeah.
You get those like, early mid 2010s FIFA soundtracks.
yeah.
Those were good. Last thing, being a college athlete, obviously very demanding. How do you unwind?
Usually, I don't know. There's a couple ways. I love just being around my friends, and we don't have to be doing anything specific, but sometimes we'll play some Jackbox games or just put on like a movie or TV show and quite literally just like veg out on the couch. or just like go do another sport sometimes too. Just like take the mind off of it. That's fun sometimes. So,
what other sports do you like to try?
I love spike ball, but also volleyball is pretty fun. Basketball can be pretty fun. I know there's a disc golf course in town. I've done that. Yeah.
What about the TV and movies? What are you guys watching?
Honestly, anything. We put on, I forget what we were doing. We put on Happy Gilmore, though, the other day and just had that. Nice. Oh, we were just playing a card game and then put Happy Gilmore on in the background. So, yeah.
That's a good background movie.
No doubt. One of the best, I'd say. Kiana Jacobson, thank you so much for joining us here at Geno's. Do you have any parting thoughts before we let you grab some wings and get out of here?
Just thanks for having me on.
Not sure what's causing the interference here. We're going to take a break here at Geno's, try to figure this out. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back. We are broadcasting this evening live from Gino's Cafe on East Main Street in Klamath Falls. Starting to fill up a little bit here, about halfway through the program. So again, you're cruising around, enjoy some wings. It's Wing Wednesday here at Gino's, so stop on by. As we continue our program, I'm Josh Eldridge. Matt Bowling is here with me, and we've got some high school football to cover that's coming up this weekend. And actually, the games, again, they start on Thursday this week. We've got Lost River taking on Culver to start our Thursday showcase. You know, last week, our game of the week was out at Lost River High School. They played St. Paul. It was a 32-22 loss for the Raiders. A tough one to swallow. It was two key plays that really cost the Raiders that game. It was a punt that kind of just got muffed, and it was a turnover, and then a fumble scoop and score for St. Paul. There's 12 points right there. It was a fantastic football game outside of those two plays. I mean, really everything that you could ask for. A couple of takeaways I had. Lost River outgained St. Paul, and it felt like really true in the second half. They could really move the ball however they wanted, and they scored most of their points in that second half. And I think the reason for that was that their passing game opened up a lot more than I think I anticipated it to. Coach Dunley said that their swapping of quarterbacks was more or less just a package that they had. But with how good Kyle Diaz threw the football on Saturday, and with how hard Hartman was running, I mean, it really just looked like an entirely different offense. I'd be curious if they wind up sticking with that kind of offensive output because of how successful that they were.
Yeah, remember, Caden Hartman was a starter at running back for Lost River last year. He's a very good, very physical runner. And you're right, Kyle Diaz looked really good throwing the ball. Lost River able to move it down the field really well with him. He was 7 of 11 passing for 133 yards. I mean, for being thrown in the middle of a game like that, that's pretty good.
And he's got some big bodies to throw to, too. I mean, not to mention Dunley, who caught a touchdown. But you've got Drew McDonald. I think he's 6'1". He looks about 6'3", compared to some of the other kids on that field. He's a big body to throw to. He caught for 40 yards, I think. I like to see him in the passing game as well. They'll open up Special District 5 play this week against Culver. That's a team that they haven't played in over a decade, since 2011. They never shared a league, but they did play eight times from 2005 to 2011, including a playoff matchup in 2007. It was the semifinals that year. Culver would go on to win that state title in 2007. Just a bit of history there. But looking at Culver this season, they've blown out everyone that they've played, winning their first three games by a combined 128 points more than their opponents. They've got the second highest scoring offense in the 2A classification. They've got the fourth best defense. If you just look at points allowed, that's very good. Now, I will say you could take all that with a grain of salt, because the teams that Culver have played, the three teams, have combined for two wins. So take that as you will. But again, I think the real thing, I'll be curious who's under center for Lost River, if they decide to switch it up, how long of a leash whichever starting quarterback will have, and if they can clean things up. Because again, those two just mistakes is what cost them the game against St. Paul. If they can clean that up, they'll remember, they'll remind everybody who Lost River is, and that the Raiders mean business moving forward throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, and Dennis Dunley said as much. You know, he said penalties and turnovers made all the difference, and it did. I mean, the second turnover, it went from being a 20-16 game late in the third quarter to a 26-16 game with late in the third quarter. So that whole, it went from a one-possession game to a two-possession game, just like that.
And it stayed that way, too.
Yeah. Another thing, too, yeah, you look at Culver, they haven't had the most difficult schedule. Country Christian, they're restarting their program this year after, I think, about a decade away. Rogue River has been struggling for much of the season.
Yeah, they're a 3A team that plays 2A football for that reason.
Yeah. But, you know, Lost River, I think the thing you need to know about them is they've done pretty well for really much of this half decade against teams not named St. Paul.
Yeah, that's very true.
St. Paul was the last team to beat them, snapped that 22-game losing streak that began after a loss to St. Paul in week three of the 2022 season. So, you know, Lost River again playing at home. They hadn't lost at home since week one of the 2021 season to St. Paul. Some teams just give you matchup issues. I think, you know, this is still the same Lost River. We saw that in their first two games beating playoff teams, 2A playoff teams, by pretty good margins. I don't see the Raiders having any problems.
I don't see it either. And when you look at a game that you lose and you can see clearly, definitively, two plays realistically cost us the game, you don't feel great about it, but you feel better than having question marks after a game. Where did we go wrong? What did we do? How do we fix? What do we fix? The Raiders know what they got to fix, and it's just cleaning up the football that they play.
Moving on, Henley versus Cascade Christian. Now, both of these teams are in a place they're really not used to being, coming off a loss. Henley took their first loss since the 2022 4A quarterfinals last week at 5A Summit. Cascade Christian, meanwhile, had posted back-to-back undefeated seasons playing at the 3A level coming into this year. They now find themselves sitting at 1-2 after losing at Siuslaw Mapleton last week. Now, I think this is going to be a really good test for both of these teams, particularly from a mental standpoint. Coaches will say, they'll say, don't let a team beat you twice. Both of these sides are going to have to put last week behind them and be ready for another quality opponent.
I think it's especially tough, and you mentioned it too. It's not just like you're coming off of a loss. You're used to losing. You know how to bounce back. Not that these kids don't know how to bounce back, but they haven't lost in multiple seasons. So that'll be interesting to see how much, you know, stick-to-itiveness and, you know, pick yourself up from your own bootstraps that each of these teams have, specifically the Hornets, because that's who we're all rooting for to come through here. I'd like to see them with the new head coach, a young quarterback, still come through and play hard football.
Speaking of quarterbacks, I am very excited about this matchup. Joe Janney versus Derek Farmer. Farmer is actually ranked above Janney in the prep red zone rankings for the junior class. He's thrown for 402 yards and two touchdowns with one interception this season while rushing for 111 yards and six touchdowns. Joe Janney, meanwhile, has thrown for 519 yards and six touchdowns with three interceptions while rushing for 164 yards and one touchdown. An interesting note, too, both of these quarterbacks are coming off rough passing games last week. Farmer was 4 of 15 for 69 yards and one touchdown against Siuslaw Mapleton. Janney was 6 of 20 for 123 yards with an interception against Summit, although he did have to do quite a bit of scrambling.
Okay, so those numbers again, you look at them, who do you think has the better numbers? Just point blank on piece of paper, blind resume comparison. To me, it looks like Joe would have the better overall numbers. I know you kind of brought this up when we were talking to Coach Green and Joe Janney specifically, the disconnect between here's a kid, 4A, Klamath Falls team, coming off a state championship, led his team to a state championship, has exceptional numbers. Kid from Medford has good numbers, is great, is ranked higher. And you wonder why that is. And that is case and point why here we are, Klamath Falls, a little bit isolated, and just don't get the respect that they deserve.
And Joe Janney playing tougher competition,
no
too.
No doubt. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I think this can be another prove-it game for Joe, because we saw him last week. He showed he can hang with those 5A athletes. He escaped sacks several times.
Yeah. I'm excited to see that matchup as well. You can watch that game on mybasin.com Friday night or listen to it on this station. The other game that we'll have coverage for coming up this week is Mazama taking on Yreka. That's our Geno's game of the week. It'll be broadcast on mybasin.com, also over on our sister station, 1150 and 92.9 KAGO. This is an interesting matchup from a few different perspectives. Of course, you can start with Coach Culp at Mazama. It's just kind of his, you know, old stomping grounds. He was head coach at Yreka until 2015. He coached at Red Bluff before stopping at Mazama, but when you're at a place for 20 seasons, I mean, there's got to be a little something deep down inside you that really wants to go after it and win this game. I found it interesting that when we talked to him, he said he didn't have any impact in putting this game on the schedule, but I think he's probably glad it's there.
Yeah, that sure is a heck of a coincidence, isn't it?
Yeah, no doubt about it. As far as the football goes with these teams, statistically, you look at on paper, they're evenly matched. Yreka averages about 381 yards per game, 269 of those on the ground. Mazama, on the other hand, 326 yards per game, 233 on the ground. Yreka's outscoring their opponents by about 8 or 9-ish points per game, but the catalyst that I'd like to see back is Chris Baldwin. He rushed for 245 yards a game, so far this season in the two games that he's played. Again, he didn't play last week in the loss against Bend, where the Vikings lost 35-7, but I'd like to see him come back, or at least Mazama be able to get back into the offense that was rolling for them, because 7 points is certainly not where they want to be or where they can be coming into this week. And I find it interesting, looking ahead at the schedule for Mazama, I don't know, I want to almost make a case for them being a must win this week because, look, you look at the schedule that Mazama has already had. You beat your rival KU, a game that, let's be honest, we probably expected Mazama to win. They got beat by Mountain View and Bend convincingly. Admittedly, tough teams. Those losses, you don't like them, but you can see where they came from. After this week against Wairika, you have winless Marshfield and Hidden Valley, who's won two games last year. And this year, they've lost by 25 points to a 3A team. North Bend, you get after Hidden Valley. They lost to Mazama by 50 points last season. So my point in this being a must-win game is I feel like this is an identity maker or breaker for Mazama. This is a game where you see Wairika and you are on even footing with them. You've got to be able to go out and beat a team that is similar to you. You're probably going to lose against teams that are far better than you. You're definitely going to beat the teams that are worse than you. And that's all you've had on the schedule to this point and for the next few games after. Go out and win a game that is evenly matched, that you know you can go toe-to-toe with. I feel like this is a big one for culture from a standpoint for Mazama.
Yeah, that's a good point. Although I just can't bring myself to call a week four non-league game that won't even count for the OSAA rankings because it's a California team. I just can't get on board with calling that a must win. Would like to win? Absolutely. I don't even know if it's necessarily that important from a momentum standpoint because, like you said, you get what shouldn't be two super difficult games for Mazama. Maybe not even three super difficult games for Mazama to start league play. So, yeah, I mean,
I think it's important for a team to know that they can beat a team as good as them, not just whoever's on their schedule. And I guess, you know, you're right. It doesn't count for your rankings. It's not a league game. That's why, from an attitude perspective, that's the only reason I make that point.
Sure. All right, Crosspoint Christian at Mohawk. Now, this could be the game of the week in the 1A 8-player division. Both teams are in a tie for first place in Special District 1. Crosspoint Christian is ranked number one by the OSAA computer rankings. Mohawk is number four. Now, we're still in the stage of the season where the computer rankings haven't completely solidified, but a win here would certainly be very helpful for either team as we get into the back half of the regular season. Warriors are coming off the most lopsided win in program history, 62-6 over a seemingly solid Riddle team last week. They're 3-0 now. Mohawk does have a loss on their record. They lost their opener at Perrydale, but they've won three in a row since then and are 3-1. You look at the numbers, Crosspoint Christian does seem to have the better defense. Mohawk has a shutout this season, but they've allowed 30, 38, and 40 in their other three games. Most points Crosspoint Christian's given up is 30 in their opener. They're going to have to be ready for Mohawk, though, because the Mustangs have hit the 60-point mark in their last two games and scored 48 in the game before that. Now, we know from previous conversations with Jim Johnston, the head coach, Crosspoint Christian doesn't want to get in shootouts. They slowed the game down pretty effectively against Camas Valley. If they can do it again here, they should have a good chance.
I feel like a lot of people have been surprised by Crosspoint Christian, who are out of the circle this year. Even standing here at Geno's, the owner here, Pete, came up to me before the show started. I was like, Crosspoint Christian, they're doing pretty good, aren't they? I'm like, yeah, if you pay attention, that this team's been building something for a while now. They've got a good head coach, and I really think, like you said, it's going to come down on the defensive end. If Crosspoint Christian, just as you said, can slow it down, play their version of football, control the momentum, they'll be in good shape. It's going to be a clash of two really, really good teams.
And you wouldn't expect to. A team with only two seniors on the roster and only one of which in a starting role to be putting up these kinds of results.
Yeah, I'm impressed and I like to see it. Klamath Union plays Sutherland this week. It's another game happening on Friday night. The Pelicans are coming off of a week against South Umpqua, frankly, where they just got stuffed on offense. They finished with their lowest passing output of the season. They wound up with -4 net rushing yards. Now, that's due to the fact that when you get sacked, it's minus rushing yards. So really, take that with a grain of salt. I think they realistically finished with like 28 or something in terms of positive yards. But their defense did a lot of good work. They held South Umpqua to their lowest output of the season by a wide margin. They were within 2 points in the last 2 minutes, which is not a bad place to be against a postseason team from last year, but a pick six just kind of sealed the deal on that game. Coming into this one against Sutherland, it feels a little bit like it did against South Umpqua because Sutherland is a good team coming into this one. They've blown out their first three opponents, including Phoenix, who's in Klamath Union's league. Sutherland's a real ground-and-pound team, though. At least they were against Phoenix. They rushed for 317 yards, four touchdowns on the ground. Compare that to KU's defense on the ground against South Umpqua. They allowed over 5 yards a carry. I would expect Sutherland to probably stick with their offensive game plan, keeping the ball on the ground. They also limited the passing attack against the Lancers, so again, that's just another thing. It just ensures that Sutherland is probably going to try to run the football on Friday night. You know, we talked last week about defense being maybe a little bit suspect for Klamath Union, but it seems like they figured out their offense. They've got an identity, and it was working. Well, last week it was the defense that worked, and it was the offense that needed to find itself. When they can put it all together, I think this will be a good team, but they've got to find their spot, got to put it all together. They're at home this week, which is nice. They've got Pink out on Friday night at Modoc Field. It's got to begin here at home against Sutherland for them.
Yeah, and I think that is just kind of part of the process for a young team that's essentially in a rebuild mode, is you have to learn how to put a complete game together. They've certainly shown the flashes on both sides of the ball. Like I said last week, you know, you look at this team last year, they were a mess. Now, this is a team that can sneak up on you.
You can tell a lot by how we're even talking about them. I mean, I don't want to be a downer or negative, but was Klamath Union worth talking about this much last year? And here we are, excited about them, feeling like they have a chance to go out and win football games. That says a lot, too.
Absolutely. Tule Lake versus Rogue River. Now, not only is this an interstate matchup, Tule Lake is basically playing up a classification. Rogue River is an Oregon 2A team, so they play 9-player football. Tule Lake, of course, is an 8-player team. Matt Andrade, the head coach of Tule Lake, says he wants to play this as a 9-player game, and he's actually not sure the last time or even if Tule Lake has ever played a 9-player game.
That's interesting.
Honkers are coming off the farthest trip in school history, 360 miles to Ross, California, where they lost to Branson. Undoubtedly glad to be back at home. Now, we mentioned earlier Rogue River has struggled. They won their opener 13-0, but they've been outscored 87-12 over their last two games. I'm just really interested to see what Tule Lake can do here.
Yeah, it feels like there's not a lot. You're not able to compare these teams too much because I don't think they've ever played each other. Like you said, Tule Lake's never played nine-man. This is going to be truly fascinating. I think you're exactly right about that. Moving on, we got one last Friday night contest. It's Bonanza on the road against Glide. Now, Bonanza took a hard loss last week. There's no two ways about it. They lost 63-28 against Lowell, the defending 2A champs. I did like seeing a 100-yard rushing game from Isaac Noble. Tristan McGann had a pick six, so there were some bright spots in that loss to take away from this. But the Antlers have fallen to 0-3 for the first time since 2019. They've got a difficult road in front of them, beginning with Glide this week, and they've got a difficult, difficult conference to play in. You look at the Wildcats from Glide, they lost 8-6 in a slugfest, but they won the next 2 weeks pretty convincingly. They are a 3A school playing down to 2A. They've done that for 7 seasons now. This is their 7th season, so effectively a 2A staple at this point. But for Bonanza, I feel like it doesn't really matter who's ahead of you on the schedule because they just haven't found themselves yet. You're not going to be able to beat another team unless you can find yourself and create that identity that we talked about in the preseason. You know, it's another week where they fell behind early and weren't able to play catch-up. They've got to stick it out at least through the first half and then try to compete in that second half. But it's really going to come down to, like I said, finding themselves and trying to dig themselves out of this hole because after this week, you got Lost River and then Culver. And we're going to see how good both of those teams are tomorrow night.
Absolutely. Saturday, our lone Saturday matchup, Chiloquin at Camas Valley. Chiloquin still looking for their first win of the season. Maybe they find it in Camas Valley. The Hornets are 1-3, and Chiloquin is actually averaging more points than they are, 29.3 to 28.5. Defense, though, is going to be a big question mark for the Panthers. They had a good game against Glendale in week two. They only allowed 14 points in regulation, but in their other two games, they've allowed 80.
Yeah, that's a tough 80 is a tough one to overcome. I think, again, for Chiloquin, you know, grabbing this win would be great. They've got a good chance at it against Camas Valley, but same thing for me as it was last week. And kind of like we talked about with KU, put together a good 4 quarters of football that you can look back and feel good about. You feel like you competed all the way through, and that's what I look to see from Chiloquin. If they can grab their first win, that's awesome. Really hoping that they're able to do that, but I'd just like to see a complete game out of them.
Yeah, it's been an uphill battle for the Panthers.
No doubt.
You know, that game last week against Dufour had to be moved because a construction crew hit a water main and a sewage line at the school, so they had to chuck it 228 miles up the road to Dufour.
Yeah.
You know, quick turnaround, especially when you're not expecting to have to go on the road. Another thing, too, their head coach, Brandon Hoagland, has told me that he has yet to play with a full roster this season. There's just a litany of issues, whether injuries, sickness, guys missing school. He says this roster has a lot of potential, and we've seen that because they've increased their scoring output with every game they've played this season. But, you know, it just comes down to, can they lock in?
External factors, like you said, sickness, there was the waterline issue. I think they had probably two total days of practice canceled right before the season with the fires, too. And that doesn't help anybody. So would like to see Chiloquin come back and hopefully grab a good win coming up at Camas Valley this weekend. So there you have it. You can grab a full look at the schedule for the football games on mybasin.com. Check it out. Again, two broadcasts this week. Henley is taking on Cascade Christian. Mazama is taking on Wairika. Both of those games start Friday night, 7 o'clock on mybasin.com. Anything to add about football before we get ready for some volleyball and soccer coming up?
Nah, I think we just spent a good 20 minutes.
I like
it. Hashing it out. I like it.
That's what it's about. All right, coming up before we end the show, we're going to talk a little bit about high school volleyball. We're going to have a broadcast tomorrow. Details on that on the other side. We're broadcasting live from Gino's Cafe. Starting to fill up. It's starting to get loud in here. It's a good time. Stop on by. One more segment left on Ballin' in the Basin. We are broadcasting live tonight from Gino's Cafe on East Main Street in Klamath Falls. Come on out, join us for the final little bit of Ballin' in the Basin tonight. I'm Josh Eldridge, joined by Matt Bowling, as always. And even though the format's changing a little bit, you can still grab a podcast after the show on mybasin.com. Also happening on mybasin.com tomorrow night, very excited for some high school volleyball. Very excited to bring these inner city matchups to the folks. We've had quite a few questions about if we're going to be broadcasting these games, and, well, we are, and it starts tomorrow night when Mazama takes on Henley in a highly touted matchup. I'm very excited for this one and to be able to broadcast it. Like I said earlier, learning more about volleyball, it's an exciting sport, and I'm really happy to be here for it. Look at these two teams just real briefly, Mazama and Henley. This is the third time that they've played this year. It was 2-1 wins for Henley at first, and then Mazama got him back at the Basin Invite. I'm really excited to see a full five-set showdown between each of these squads because in just about every respect, they are even. Henley's won 21 sets. Mazama's won 22 this season. Head-to-head, Mazama has a 105-100 edge. You've got star players on both sides. It has all the makings for a great rivalry volleyball matchup. And again, this isn't the last time we're going to have these games broadcast because Tuesday night, you've got Mazama hosting Klamath Union, and that'll be another good game. You've got Mazama, who is, you know, the reigning three-peat league champions. You've got Klamath Union, who is kind of struggling a little bit here at the beginning of the season. They got a win against Phoenix last night, but they feel like it's their turn to step up. And well, I'm excited about this week for volleyball and glad that we're going to be doing it.
Yeah, me too. All right, let's touch on some high school soccer really quickly. A few results from Monday. Both Klamath Union teams played 5A Ashland in their first matches since September 7th. It was a 2-0 loss for the girls and a scoreless draw for the boys. Both Henley teams also played a 5A squad, Eagle Point. The girls won 8-0 and the boys won 2-1. Then yesterday we had an interstate matchup with the Lost River Bonanza boys hosting Tule Lake. Honkers won 5-0. Back up in 4A, Skyline Conference play starts tomorrow for both the boys and the girls, with Henley facing Phoenix and Klamath Union facing Hidden Valley New Hope Christian. Now, at this point, both Henley teams seem to be in pretty good position to repeat as league champions. And I'll tell you what, Lane Worrell of the Henley boys seems to be in a pretty good position to repeat as the Skyline Conference Player of the Year. He's got 8 goals in the Hornets' first 5 games. Between him and Joe Janney, I think Henley might have two of the most exciting fall sports athletes in the basin.
That is exciting, and we appreciate you hanging out with us for a little bit tonight. And, of course, you can see the updates on volleyball and soccer just by visiting us online at mybasin.com and following the show each and every week. Excited to come back here to Gino's in a couple of weeks. It's going to be a second Wednesday of each month type deal. So mark it on your calendars, I guess. Look ahead the next few months and join us down here at Gino's. It's been a first fun live show down here in the cafe.
Absolutely. I'm ready to go smash some wings.
I know. It is Wing Wednesday. Got to get after it. All right. Join us next week. We'll be back in the studio downtown Klamath Falls. Of course, grab a podcast of tonight's show on mybasin.com. And we'll be back same time, same place next week. 104.3 960 Sports.